This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is brought to you by Lightstream, the nation's premier online consumer lender. Lightstream offers low-interest, fixed-rate loans from $5,000 to $100,000 for practically any purpose. It's also brought to you by our newest Patreon members, Janelle Major, Christine Daniels, and Angela Costantini. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you all. I couldn't do this without you. You rock my world. I am so grateful to all of you for making this show a possibility.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hello, hello, Catherine and Nick.
Hello.
What is up, you two?
Life. Holy moly.
It's a lot coming hard and fast.
If y'all don't remember Catherine and Nick, they were from seasons ago. Season two or season three or season four.
Maybe.
Anyway, they're from way back when. Their story is a beautiful one. It's kind of a Brady Bunch story. Can y'all give it in a nutshell real quick?
So we're Nick and
Catherine.
And we are a beautiful, queer, blended family. I am trans. I lived the first 30 years of my life in girl mode. I was married to a dude. I did it all the way. Had four kids. Loved it. And then I fell in love with this one, unlocking the keys to all my insides. And, you know, I got divorced.
I was a solo mom of one, and we blended our families. So together we have five kids.
Yeah, that's the other part.
Yeah.
And you've been living that blended family life for a while. I mean, it's been some years since we last spoke. I mean, I follow y'all on the socials, so I know what's going on. Like, I know you have a house that you've fixed up and you've...
Fixed up is generous.
Is generous. We moved to a falling down...
Oh, my God.
...place on a little island off the coast of Canada. And boy, oh boy, were we in over our heads.
Yeah. Whoa. We bought the house sight unseen off the internet.
Because it was pandemic time, right?
It was pandemic time. We had been planning the move anyway. We lived in the most conservative part of the country. And as a, you know, queer family, as a trans family, with a trans kid and...
Trans dad.
Yeah. It was that whole like, oh, do we really want to be living in the most conservative place in the country? Or we literally then moved to the most liberal riding in the whole country.
They don't know what writing means. Writing, it's a Canadian
thing. It's a Canadian thing. We're in the most liberal spot in the country.
And you can probably hear the roosters crowing.
Mm-hmm. I just heard a rooster. I was like, what is that, a wolf?
No, it's a rooster. So now we live in a little cabin in the forest with a bunch of chickens and an unruly dog and a lot of mud and love and joy and...
Chaos.
And yeah.
And love.
It's that blended family life, yo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But wait a second, you mentioned you also have a trans kid as well. I don't think I knew that before. That's something that I just watched this little tiny short documentary on Vice News. It's a bunch of families in the States are moving states because of all the crazy shit that's going down with our laws and our being
forced out. It's a dangerous time to be trans in America.
It's terrifying.
Yes. Yeah, it really is.
They're like, 18 is not enough. Apparently, you can buy a gun, but you can't
be yourself.
It makes no sense.
The slew of horrible, horrible laws coming through right now is honestly horrifying.
How about Canada? Is it scary there?
I mean, we've got Jordan Peterson or whatever that wingnut guy is. Uh-huh. But he's like kind of an outlier. It's a hate crime to misgender someone on purpose in Canada. Or in BC anyway. It's like we take it seriously, but we have a liberal government in right now. So
That's great.
You know, and we have for 8 years or something like that. So
what I'm hearing is we all have to move to Canada yet again.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of good here. Yeah. We are grateful to live where we live while we're living here. And we are aware of that privilege and how lucky we are to be able to like not have to turn the news on every second because it doesn't affect our everyday safeness right here, right now, in this moment, you know? Mm-hmm.
Or worry that you're going to be arrested walking down the street or that we would be arrested for our parenting.
Yeah.
Both very real concerns if we lived in the U.S. right now, in parts of the U.S.
Yeah.
And I think that these families are moving because the parents are afraid that they're going to get arrested for letting their child live the way their child
needs to live. For affirming their child's identity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the interview that we are bringing in. It's a really awesome interview. It's actually episode one of this season was Gwen's story, because Gwen actually comes from two moms. And so she grew up that lesbian lifestyle and then actually became gay herself, which is interesting. And now Gwen is back with her partner, Liz. And they're talking blended family here. They've got four kids. Liz had one of them. Gwen, as we know, had three before that she had adopted with her ex. And there are a lot of layers, as you two know, when it comes to blended families.
Yeah, I just thought it was really cool to see another family that was like, that's like kind of like us. I would be like, oh, they're more like us than not like us. But also seeing them do it just differently and being like, that's really cool that there's like a thousand, just like there's a bunch of different ways to love and there's a bunch of different ways to be and exist. Of course, there's a bunch of different ways to do this part as well. And I just think that that's really cool that they sort of have figured out their way. It's so different from our way. Our urge to merge is strong, okay? We are, they say like, oh, we're not the Brady Bunch here. And I'm like, oh, like that was like totally what we were going for. We were like, oh, we're going to like, if we're going to do this, even when we started dating, there wasn't really like, oh, are we dating? It was like, if we're going to do this, like, we're going to do this. Like, we're not, we don't have the ability, the luxury of like testing out the waters.
Dating.
And like, you know.
No, yeah, you were
to date. Right? Like, not us.
with as many kids as we already had.
Yeah. And so it was very much like, if we're going to do this, what would this look like? Here are our non-negotiables. Here's what matters to us. Here are our values. Mm-hmm. And one of our values was like, she wanted the whole mom experience. She didn't want, like, we don't have step parents.
Right.
I may be one of their dads. I'm their mm-hmm. other dad, but I'm not mm-hmm. step or less than, because I'm right here all day right. long. We're right. very blended.
Fully,
very much so. Yeah.
Fully blended. And that's mm-hmm. the beauty of our families. We also come to be in so many different, unique, amazing mm-hmm. ways. And then how we choose to do things is also unique and beautiful and outside the box, because we get mm-hmm. to be outside the box. And that's why these mm-hmm. family stories are so important, these queer family mm-hmm. stories.
Yeah.
So I love that. And thank you for sharing that. And I'm really excited to introduce the interview that's coming up with Gwen and Liz, because they have a blended family and theirs is their makeup is a little different than y'all's, which is beautiful. Those roosters, oh my God, I love them. I yeah. love the roosters.
I love it too. It's great. And I loved the interview with Gwen and Liz, and I loved hearing how they did it, and I loved hearing the things that, like there was a lot of reasons for the way they did what they mm-hmm. did, and they had different considerations than we had. And so it was just really cool to be like, oh yeah, there's 1,000 ways to do it, and all of them are awesome, and there's lots yeah. of things that we probably do different that they wouldn't do in like lots of other ways. And I just thought it was really mm-hmm. cool just to see. That's what I love about this podcast, is like, we get to see 1,000 ways to be straight all the time, and how to parent straight, and how to be married straight, and how to be dating straight, and how to do all of it. But like, we only get like, what, 2 stories? That's like, we get 2 threads, yeah, maybe, 2 if
token,
we're lucky. Like,
the 2 token ones. Yeah.
You know, and like, there's 1,000 ways, and there's like so many nuanced, beautiful ways to do family and to do love and to do all of it. And I just love that that's what we get to see with this podcast. And I'm so excited for everyone to hear the episode.
Oh, thank you. That was beautifully said, Nick. I love that you just said all that. And the other beautiful thing about it is, you know, parenting in a blended family, when each of your kids have their own unique and different needs, is also a really mm-hmm. interesting thing that we kind of delve into in this interview too, which we just kind of delved into with you all too, because that's a big thing in parenting.
It adds this, like you were talking about layers, and it adds this extra layer, because you can have kids within the same home. You do have kids within the same yeah. home who are having really different experiences from each other, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're blending not just families, but you're blending like this whole kind of connected kaleidoscope of worlds. And even in the blending, there are still these pieces that stay connected into different things. And so it gets very complicated. And
yeah.
And thank the good Lord for therapy. Okay.
Amen. Amen. Hallelujah.
You know.
Hallelujah.
Thank
you. We all need that therapy. I need to get that BetterHelp sponsorship back, because we all need the therapy. Let's be real. Oh my God. Well, thank you two so much for helping introduce this episode. And I think it's time to tell Helen and Beulah, my assistants who do not exist, because I'm still alone on an island here, to please roll that tape. Helen and Beulah, roll that tape, darlings. Roll it. Roll it.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Wait, Helen, stop. Before you roll that tape, I need to mention one thing. I have to mention Patreon. If you all like this show and you want to keep hearing these super important LGBTQIA+ family stories, you can help. You can join my Patreon community. I've got various tiers on the page, starting at just $2 a month. You're going to do a good thing, and you're going to get bonus content, like videos of most episodes dropped a day early, crazy behind-the-scenes shenanigans of yours truly trying to get it together, and anything else I can think of to keep you all entertained and engaged. You're just going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to join. And a huge, 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 huge thank you to all you Patreons who are already supporting this show. It means the world to me. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much. Okay. All right. Helen and Beulah, please roll that tape.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Hi, Gwen and Elizabeth.
Hi.
It's really fun to have you here. It's funny because, you know, the listeners don't know at home that we've been just kind of shooting the shit for like 15 minutes because we're getting along. It's just a bunch of lesbians talking, hanging out. That's what we are. That's what we're doing. Lesbian moms whose life are probably just messy, 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 but We are hanging out. The listeners kind of know Gwen because they have already heard Gwen's story, which was like mind-blowing and like beautiful in all the wonderful queer ways that it can possibly be. And now Gwen's partner, Elizabeth, is here to share a little bit more about their story and their journey. So that's where I'm going to stop because I don't do a great job of summarizing your stories. I think you'll do it way better. So let's get right into that 30-second elevator pitch.
Are we going together or separately?
I don't know.
Are we
going together?
Let's go together. Okay, let's just.
You're going to do it together? Oh, boy, this is
fun.
You start.
You can do it. We have a habit where Gwen tells, like, stories and, like isn't very detailed in her storytelling often. So, like, when we're out in a setting, Gwen will start with, like, the overarching key points, and then I'll fill in all the holes. But let's see if we can do that in 30 seconds.
I love this. This is basically how my wife and I do stories too, but then my wife is like, I know I was gonna get to that part, and then we start like bickering. So yeah. I'm very excited.
I was like,
for
do you mind see. Can I just fill in a couple holes here?
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure you add this part. Yeah, I feel you. I know how it goes. Okay, here we go. On your mark. Okay. Get set. Go.
Okay. Let's see. Our oldest kid is almost 14. So this is Gwen. Started fostering when I was in my 20s. We adopted three kids through foster care. My co-parent and I got divorced when my kids were four, five, and seven. And then Liz, oh man, we're going to be really over time. Your turn. You go.
See, it's hard. I was like, not even sure I was going to have kids for most of my life. I had like a little bit of an intuition that I might be a single mother at some point, in part because I was raised by a single mom. I took a year-long adventure around the world and came home pregnant and decided to have a child. My child's father is Angolan, so he lives abroad, and raised my daughter pretty much with the help of my mother for the first, I guess it was 3 years. So when we met, our kids were 3, 4, 5, and 7, and it was like a quintessential small town gay love story in which we were both on the board of directors at our kids' early childhood center during a time of a lot of transition and a lot of meetings. And we just
stayed late, as you do.
Yeah,
so we created more agenda items to
the two of us needed to talk through, and then
that's how that happened.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a little over, just a little, but it's fine with me. I don't mind because there's a lot in here, right? So beautiful, amazing. There's a lot to unpack and there's a lot for us to talk about. But first I want to ask Elizabeth, how old were you when you had did you say it's your daughter?
My daughter. I was 31.
Oh, wow. Okay. Not sure you want to have a baby, end up, you know, traveling the world as you do gay style. And not gay style, getting pregnant accidentally.
That's a pretty key part of the story, too. It is a key part of the story.
Yeah, and I'll just, like, name right out of the bat. Like, Gwen's the first woman. I mean, actually, back up. Gwen's my, like, longest partnership, period. Uh-huh. But also not the first woman I've been intimate with, but the first woman I've been in a committed relationship with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, Gwen, we know basically how your children came to you, but we'll take a little recap after we unpack Elizabeth's story. And so how did you identify when you went on this world trip?
That's such a good question. How did I identify? I feel like the question of how I identify is actually still has a question mark around it for me.
Okay.
In terms
All right. Let's talk. Let's unpack that.
Are you ready? We're just going to get right into the meat of it.
I love it.
God, where do I even start? I guess I'll just say, like, I grew up in Northampton, Massachusetts, as we were joking before the start of the show, deemed lesbian capital of the United States of the America, and, you know,
it's like the lesbian and Birkenstocks capital.
Yeah, totally.
Barbara Walters did like a whole show on it. So many dance goes.
Lots of clogs, lots so of stocks, and lots of gays.
I'm not gonna lie, I've had many pairs of dance goes and Birkenstocks. Okay, continue.
So I grew up in like a very, I mean, I'll call it queer now, but that's not the language that was being used in the 80s and 90s. It was very like gay and lesbian.
Yes.
And then the, you know, the bisexuals as the is the third leg of the stool, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny, I never really thought about like my identity in a big way, other than always sort of saying, well, I'm like attracted to men right now, but if the right woman came along, I'd be with a woman, and just always having this like flexibility and always having a lot of different families and sexual mm-hmm. preferences around me, which I think is part of why I like did it in some ways, like never sort of felt this urge to put a stake in the ground in any real way, because I was like living in this kind of privileged environment bubble. Of like, yeah. Yeah. And so it took on a bit of a different meaning.
Mm-hmm. Identity is hard. Yeah. And now there are so many more terms that we can use that were not there, like you just said,
yeah.
in the 80s and 90s. It was gay, lesbian, and bisexual. And bisexual was not necessarily
yeah.
accepted.
Totally.
Like you had to choose a side, right?
Totally. Yeah. I think like there's a lot of ways I understand that for myself. And, you know, being like really honest and vulnerable, one of the ways I understand that is like growing up as a very overweight child and adolescent, having a deep yearning to be sort of accepted or idealized through the male gaze, you know, the male gaze being just like what is also just like mass culture, popular culture, mm-hmm. the patriarchy, mm-hmm. all that is. And so now as I've like reflected on like, wow, what was that, right? The part of me that was like, yeah, like I'm like intimate with women. And like, I would definitely tell you that like the first love of my life was a woman. Mm-hmm. And yet I was like continuing to pursue partnership with men.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of with an underlying, like, I need to prove that I can like, I need to prove I can like be part of mainstream society or be seen as attractive by a man or be accepted. And it, there's mm-hmm. been a long like journey with my body and my mm-hmm. physical appearance and beauty and all of that, and weight that, has been a big part of my story through my teens mm-hmm. and 20s, especially.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. 100%.
And I want to just like say too, just to like out of respect for like some of the men I have been partnered with, like I really loved them too. Same. And when I look at like, you know, I'm like, oh, there was like some choices I was making too about what I was narrowing in on that came from a real sort of distorted need.
Mm. So you went on a trip, you hooked up and got home and realized...
Yeah, little more involved than that. So after grad school, I bought a one-way ticket to India and traveled throughout India and Nepal and Africa and met who is my daughter's father. I was in India for a four-month stint, met him the last like 3 days, had like a brief love affair, left him thinking that was a love affair, like whatever, I'm never going to see that guy again. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up being in communication and I went to Africa and spent 2 months with him and his family and he came to the States. And so I'd say it was probably like 8 months into this weird whirlwind of a love affair that I was standing in my parents' kitchen here in Northampton and realized I was pregnant. And it was like a bit of a moment where I was like, okay, like I just got these master's degrees. I've been traveling for a year. I have like a house. Like, what am I going to do with my life? And like, what do I want to do?
Right. Yeah.
With this baby. And my mom was like, hey, seems like, you know, you aren't sure if this is your long-term relationship and like you really want to have this baby. And if you do, like move back here and like I'll help you. And so that is what I did.
Wow. So you decided to keep the baby. And was there a conversation with the father about it? And how did that go down?
Yeah. And he was elated. He has two other daughters who are older, but you know, we'd also like had our first major conflict, like all the sort of signs were there that like it was not necessarily mm-hmm. going to be a relationship okay. with a lot of longevity.
So you were like living that Elizabeth Gilbert, eat, pray, love life. And you were going to live your passion. You were going to live your right. Yeah. And then you come back and you have these degrees, like sky's the limit. You're going to start the and then, oh no. I'm going to have a baby and I'm going to settle down and I'm going to live at
yeah.
home.
Yeah.
That is a big, huge freaking change.
It's a huge fucking change. But one thing I will say is that, you know, there's a part of me that's like very experience oriented. I've traveled a lot. I like, I'm always learning. I'm always digesting. I'm always like thinking about what's next and what I can build, do, create. I will say that actually like pregnancy was like the most inner peace I've ever felt in my life. I was really? Like, oh, if I did like nothing else in my life, carrying a child in my body and eventually birthing them is like a pretty, like I can feel good about this.
Okay.
So it was a strange, very unexpected kind of like, I call it almost like a soothing of my like existential anxiety of like, what do I need to do, be, right. become, create? Everything just became very present moment for me.
Wow. That's beautiful. I have to say, I didn't have that experience with my pregnancy.
Most people don't.
But I thought I would. I really thought I would. Yeah. So there's that. But okay, so now let's talk about you're settled down with your baby and your family. What happens? Where do you go from there? Like, I know where it's going to end up, but yeah. like, how do we get there?
Yeah.
So funny. I'm just thinking about first meeting you and we like ended up on the board together. I was dating someone at the time. Gwen was still in her marriage. And I just remember having that feeling of like, oh no, like, and I think both of us have talked about this since both of us were a little bit like, oh no, we can't talk to that person. Like, I was like, I can't talk to that person that like,
because
like there's some sort of attraction mm-hmm. I can feel in me. And like that person's married and I'm currently dating someone and like, that's off limits. So I'd say for the first year, we actually didn't, we like barely even looked at each other. Yeah.
But Gwen, did you feel the spark too?
Yeah, I was definitely, and I like in retrospect, like there was when they invited you onto the board, I was like, I don't know if you should really do that. I mean, I don't know that that's a great idea. And then I was like, why are you saying that? Like you like, and then I was like, you're kind of hot, and like you're kind of like,
and you can't, you're not allowed to stray.
I was
married.
Like, totally. Yeah, very much so.
And you had kids.
Very married, and like. In a small community, like Gwen and her ex were, I would say like a very idealized version of family for a lot of people. And I think like there's probably a lot of listeners out there who can either relate themselves or have like seen couples like this who almost get like pedestaled within the community.
Just in case there's a listener who didn't already listen. And if you haven't listened to Gwen's episode, go find it and listen because it's really a bomb. It's a bomb episode. But Gwen, give us a rundown of like how your kids came to you and so we have a good clear picture of who you are in society right now.
Sure. So I was like I desired to be a parent from a really young age. I started fostering when I was like 24 or something really young. And so adopted one kid through foster care, who's now almost 14, with my then wife, and then fostered a bunch and was like, oh, maybe we're gonna have our own biological kids. Like let's adopt one more. Figured we'd wait a long time, didn't wait a long time, got my son, who's now almost 11, or 11 rather.
Your son came through fostering, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yep, came home at 2 days old. Mm-hmm. And then like 3 months in, they were like, so bun in the oven, do you want his brother, who now identifies as non-binary, so his sibling. We said, sure. And in the interim, my oldest, so those two are biologically related. My oldest has now three younger biological siblings, all of whom I fostered at one point or another. So it's like too much to keep track of.
I see why I can see how you'd be put on a pedestal. Like you have parented so many children and y'all are like, you were like co-parenting so well, you know, to for all intents and purposes, right?
Yeah.
And you were like a poster couple for how queer folks do it right.
Totally. 100%.
Right.
100%. Yeah. I want to just add to Gwen's story that even before Gwen fostered, Gwen had a babysitting business in high school and was like watching every single kid in the community.
Especially and had, like, kids of queer parents.
And had like a wait list, basically. Of so like that goes back like so far for her. Yeah.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Okay, folks. As we all know, the beginning of the year sets the tone for the rest of it, right? So if one of your goals this year is to take control of your credit card debt, like it is for mine, now is the time to start. It's still the beginning of the year. We still have time. Pay off your credit cards faster with a low fixed rate loan from LightStream. We all start the new year ready to make big changes in our lives, but it can be tough to keep that momentum going, as we all know. But LightStream can help. They make it really simple. A credit card consolidation loan from LightStream can help you pay off your credit cards and lock in a low fixed interest rate. Rates start at 7.99% APR with autopay and excellent credit. Plus, the rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. You could even get your money as soon as the day you apply, which is really nice. And just for TQFP listeners, you can apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/OCT. That's LIGHTSTREAM.com/OCT. Disclaimer, subject to credit approval, rates range from 7.99% APR to 23.99% APR and include a 0.5% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/OCT for more information.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
So, you come on the board, there's a spark, but you're trying not to look at each other.
I feel like I'm like, I didn't cheat. Like, I want to,
it's like important. To, yeah.
That like, yeah. That all coincided with me getting divorced. So that all happened before anything happened between the two of us, or even the spark of anything happened between the two of us.
Right.
And I was also doing this internal game with myself as someone who had been partnered with man after man after man of like, oh, whatever. It's just an innocent little benign little crushy thing.
Yeah. Okay. But then the first time we ever kissed, you were like, am I going to like live in a house with four kids? And I was like, whoa,
you're
like the straightest U-hauler I've ever met in my whole, like, what is going on? I was like, that's even a lot for me.
I also was like, oh, this person seems like they're like going through, this sounds
she
so
looks like a shit show. Let me go sleep with her.
Perfect. Yeah. Gwen was like simultaneously going through a divorce with three kids and had like just fucking defended and gotten her PhD. Right, and I just remember having this moment where I was like, wow, this human's like doing a lot of different things right now. You know, it's like best and worst of times. And like there was, I could just feel that. And so there was just little, I think I was like putting forward little gestures. Like I was like, hey, I like brought you a beer. Like, hey, I, you know. And it was coming from like a, you know, whatever. I'm not going to say I'm void of like clear like ulterior motives, but like when I reflect on that, I'm like, oh, I was like really, my heart felt very like inclined to like care for you.
Because you had like a lesbian crush. And when you have.
And then I'm like, how was your day? And she's like, oh my God, you're the nicest person I've ever been with.
And I'm like, no man has ever asked me how my day was.
Yeah, it's a lesbian crush. And they are intense. And you really do want what's best for the person you're crushing on. Like, yeah. So there's a lot of compassion that goes into these lesbian crushes, right?
And I think it's, you know, it is true. I think and you were kind of going through like a rocky post-dating situation with somebody. And I think like there is something about like having met at a time when like, I had no game. I was like kind of unraveled. Like there's like, this is what I am at my core.
You were in the trenches, yo. Yeah, you had four kids and you were going through a divorce. You were in the trenches. There's no time to breathe.
Yeah.
So when did you take your relationship to the next level and then how'd that pan out? Because there's a lot of kids involved.
Yeah. So it's funny. Like, so two things I'm thinking. One is, you know, I think we did sort of like, there are things that we kept separate. And I don't know if this is true of everybody who gets together with someone like later in life or after a long relationship or something, but there is this way in which like different from my 20-year-old self, like I'm like, we both had our own lives, like complete lives. And like, we had places to go process shit that we didn't want to talk to with each other or like that didn't feel like it didn't need to take a space between us. And I think that actually really remains true for us both. And I think it's one of the ways that we like, I mean, we could talk about this too, but like, I think that our relationship has evolved in a different, like, yes, we have a blended family. Yes, we at times like parent one another's kids, but we also have like a lot of distance between us in certain ways or independence, I would say. And so, you know, we waited a while, 6 months or something like that before we started hanging out with each other's kids.
Mm-hmm. And then the kids didn't fully know what was, I mean, they were so young at that point too. I mean, the eldest was 7, you know, so they were little. I don't think they fully, that wasn't fully on their radar that like we would all be spending time together even in those early times because like there was something romantic happening between us. In fact, tell that story. Gwen recently had like a sex talk with the kids in the minivan and they were like, they basically were like said to Gwen, they were like, you have sex? With who?
No, stop. Really?
And I was like, well, Liz. And they were like, okay, can we just talk about something else?
And I was like, wow, there's a lot we take for granted. Our kids understand that they just like totally not.
They thought you were just like Kate, like literally Kate and Allie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gwen spent about 2 years living in the house that she and her ex had lived in. And so we had this like kind of interesting swapping of time because Gwen had her kids half time. My mom and my daughter are like thick as thieves. And so they spent a ton of time together. So we got like kind of an unusual amount of like solo time and bonding time, which
is amazing.
It's really amazing. In fact, I'm like, it's kind of wild this way that we like have children with the people that we like fall in love with. And then we end up being like, where's our relationship? Because now all we're doing is parenting together. Mm-hmm. And there was this like, you know, different element to what was available to us because we came together, you know, already having our kind of family structures intact. So yeah. And it was a lot of the kids like figuring out, so when I think about those like early years of them connecting and then where they are now, it's like, it's kind of amazing. I mean, so my daughter Isis and Gwen's youngest, Jonah, I mean, for the first like year, maybe they were like at each other.
They like bickered.
They bickered. Oh, there was a little bit of this, like, who's going to hold the position of the youngest one?
Right, right.
And like everyone looking to the seven-year-old for all of, you know, everyone wanting to be in her good graces all the time. And then it's just like shifted. I mean, it shifted in a lot of different ways over time, but I would say like specifically with those, with Isis and Jonah, like, those two are so close now.
I mean, that's the best you could hope for, right?
Totally.
In general, I will say like the four of them get along really beautifully.
There's so many expanded versions of what family looks like in our house, like between conversations. Like we have a lot of conversations about like the difference between your biological parent and who's parenting you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have all these different configurations. I mean, Jonah and Michael are biological siblings. As Gwen shared, Matea, the oldest, has three other siblings who Gwen has like fostered at some point and who she sometimes sees. Isis has these two sisters in Africa that she's never met.
Right.
And a dad she FaceTimes with sometimes. Like everybody's, there's this real kind of expanded, malleable sense of what family means.
I love that. That's new traditional family right there. That's like, that is the epitome of why this we needed this podcast, because of families like this that break the mold and also show the world that it works.
Totally.
And it's fucking beautiful, right? Yeah, so
totally.
And it doesn't always work, like, but
we were talking about yesterday as we were just sort of like thinking about the discussion we're having right now. I was thinking about, which I think about a lot, is like what we're modeled. Like my parents divorced when I was two. I was an only child. My mom, she had a couple boyfriends early on, but then didn't repartner again until I was like 16, 17. Wow. So essentially it was just her and I for a lot of years. And then my dad, he had one partner who he was with for almost 15 years from the time I was like 10 to 25. So my most like formative years. And that was the model for me. That was very much her approach. She was like, I'm not here to like, I'm just going to like treat your mom with respect. She's your mom. And like, know that like, there are things your parents have say over that like, I don't have say over as this like other adult in the space. And so it's always kind of this interesting thing of like, you know, the sort of frame that we often use is like, where are we together? Where are we apart? Like, what are the things that we have like fully shared ownership over? And then what are the things we don't? And like, how do we navigate that?
Huh. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's really working out for y'all.
Most of the time it does. I feel like we have our moments. You know, like I think sometimes everybody I'm like, does. Oh, I thought we were together there. Or like, oh, I thought we worked together there. And, you know, or vice versa. Like we both have that. Like,
or I'm like, you didn't consult me. I didn't know that Jonah was doing gymnastics again on Wednesday. Well, that like totally messes up this whole other plan I made around, it's, you know, there's like the logisticizing is ridiculous sometimes.
It's so ridiculous. And I only have two kids. You have four.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That part is complicated.
Let's pivot a little bit because we did talk about kind of talking about parenting through neurodiversity and how that shows up. And that's something that I would love to dig into more. And I haven't had enough conversations about that. And there's a lot of neurodiversity out there in the world. And there are a lot of parents who are raising children with neurodiversity. So let's dig into that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the other piece that's relevant for our kids is that so two of them are white and two of them are biracial or multiracial. And so there's like, there's that piece too, that factors into their identities and, you know, like all of the things that that means for them in the world.
Well, yeah, you're two white parents raising children. So that's all, there's some intersectionality there and a lot goes into that too. So dig into kind of what you would want to discuss about it. Cause y'all know more about it than I do.
I'll kick us off. I think just like speaking to the neurodiversity part, it's like important to name that this is Gwen's like professional and academic wheelhouse.
Right.
So I'm in like a constant state of learning mm-hmm. around like how to put language to things, how to have patience, quite honestly, you know, when I'm like having an expectation that like doesn't match processing speed or like, you know, what's possible in the moment.
I could use help in that matter. My daughter has ADHD and I definitely am not doing the best job with it. I'll be straight up front.
Well, it's hard to know what to do because I don't think we're like, and again, we live in a world that caters towards like a certain kind of functioning, a certain kind of mind, you know what I mean? Right. So like, it's, you know, I think most of us are like at a deficit of like tools or understanding or empathy. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's been like a lot of learning for me. I mean, it's been a lot of learning for me around parenting, I think, in general. Like, I would say that like, I'm probably more of a, like, I'm like, oh, I can't wait for you all to become teenagers and want to like talk through those deep existential things and all your like weird social choices.
You had a dream last night that we were all partying together.
Yeah, I had a dream we were all partying wow. together last night. And I was like, oh, finally, we're all dancing. We're staying up till 5 a.m. Like,
whoa. So, I am so scared of the teenage years. Right. Okay.
I mean, I'm scared too, but I feel like there's a part of me that like, I mean, I do leadership development work. I work with adults often. Mm-hmm. Gwen mm-hmm. works entirely with kids. So like, there's a lot of learning I've done in her presence of like how to, and you'll find us in the kitchen often. I'll be like trying to explain something to one of the kids and I'll just like give up and look at Gwen and be like, can you translate into kid language? Because I like have no idea how to say this in a simple way.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that goes on in my house too, but it's like vice versa between the two of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we have four kids who all present in different ways and like all have sort of different superpowers and different areas of challenge and like different personalities. And it is kind of wild, I think, in general for me. I think Gwen has more experience having been in a classroom or like any place where there's like a lot of different types of kids. It's hard for me to realize, I'm like, oh, you all kind of need something a little bit different. And so right. it requires me as a parent to be constantly, or as the adult in the room, to be constantly shifting.
Because Liz, you came to this home with one child that you kind of, I'm assuming you knew and knew how to parent, and you know, we all have our challenges with our kids, but you came with one child and now you're in with three other children who have all of their needs and you're not used to dealing with multiple 100%. Children's needs, right?
100%. And like, I'm an only child myself. Like I said, like I grew up in a very small kind of family system. Mm-hmm. So that is very real. In terms of just like, yeah, I mean, we talk about that a lot of just like, mm-hmm. I think Gwen is like more like collectively attuned, honestly, in some ways. And I'm a little bit more like, whoa, it gets really overwhelming really mm-hmm. fast. And like, how do we navigate that?
Yeah.
So Gwen, how do you navigate that?
It's part of like philosophically where I come from, just this idea that like everybody is different. Everybody does need something different. And I think the kids know that, like, they're like, oh, here's so-and-so goes again on their bullshit. Like, I know how mommy's going to respond to that. You know what I mean? And like they do, like, I think there is like a level of consistency, even mm-hmm. though it doesn't look the same. And when they were younger or at like different times, I'm not like, I feel like kids have said any of them have said like, there is a disparity, or I mean, they don't use that language, but they're like, you're not being fair, like whatever.
Right.
And I feel like mm-hmm. I've been able to walk it back and be like, listen, like you don't need that. Like you need something different. Like this is what losing it looks like for you.
Right.
And this is what like your morning routine needs to be, because here are these three reasons I've thought about it. Like, do you want to collaborate? But like, it doesn't have to be the same for everyone.
Yeah.
My three have like always grown up with like having other kids in and out of the house too. So there is this understanding of like, you just don't know who anybody is or what they're going to get, like what you're going to get when a kid.
Like everybody could be waiting in the car and one person's inside melting down, and okay, we all wait in the car until that one person's done melting down. That's like what happens with a lot of kids. That doesn't, you know, happen with one.
Right.
I think it's illuminated for me too, where it gets easier with more. I mean, there are ways, right, in which it's like obviously more chaotic or more challenging logistically, but there is ways in which parenting is easier because it's like, you know, everybody's watching a movie and you're like, time to go, everyone brush your teeth. All you need is like one kid to get up and start the movement. And everybody's like, okay, I guess so.
Wow, not in my house.
I say that because like I have moments where it's just like, I feel like, you know, it's Isis is the only one being parented, right? And her and I particularly like can get into major power struggles, right? So it's like, then we're just like locked in. We're like dueling it out. You know what I mean? I'm mm-hmm. like, no. Like,
Liz is like, Gwen, go tell her to do it. And I'm like, hey.
She's like, okay. Yeah. Well, and that's what happens, right? And I think similarly too, like with Gwen's kids, there's ways in which like, you know, they'll be having a melt. Gwen absolutely can't talk to the kids. It's like a screaming match. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go upstairs and they'll be so soft with me just because like the dynamic in the relationship is just like inherently different. And I think it's interesting to me. It doesn't have that same charge of like, you're my parent and your job is to push the boundary and my job's to push back against it. Right. There's a little bit more of like, oh, you're my ally. And like, you're my friend in this moment. And it's cool to watch how that can play out.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of, I was just trying to think more specific.
We're so chatty, by the way.
I'm sorry.
I love it. Listen, it makes my job easy.
That whole 30-second thing at the beginning.
No, I love it. Keep going. 30-second
the end here. No. I think like two things that come to mind around like the neurodiversity piece. I think routines are really important. I think consistency is really important. And somebody said something to me, like one of the first foster placements I ever had was a kid who was identified as having reactive attachment disorder, which basically means a lot of really intense and complicated behavior. Mm-hmm. And this woman I was working with was like, listen, at the end of the day, you're gonna be exhausted because like you figured out how to prevent every single meltdown or you didn't, like you were just playing catch up with yourself. And I think that like, for some reason, you know, like different stupid things land at different times. But like that to me, I think about a lot where I'm like, tomorrow Gwen is gonna be really happy if today Gwen implements like these strategies with my kids.
Or tonight, once they're finally asleep, Gwen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the moment. That is always the moment when the guilt sets in for the way that I behaved with one of their meltdowns or the impatience I showed.
Yeah.
That's when it hits, and it hits hard and it hurts.
Yeah. I feel like our kids don't often try to like, they don't try and like split and divide us very often, but like, of course they're kids. Like they do that sometimes and like they should. It's like a natural testing of boundaries. But like we have plenty of times where I'm like, sure, you can blah, blah, blah. Or no, you can't blah, blah, blah. And like Gwen has told them the exact opposite. And then we just look like such, we just look like such idiots.
We need to discuss this.
We're like, so we'll be back. We're going to go talk this.
Right. Yeah. But the fact is that you're working to co-parent, you know what I mean? And like when it comes to splitting parenting duties, I mean, there are a lot of queer folks who take on very heteronormative roles when it comes to parenting. Totally. But there are a lot of us who don't and who split things 50-50. And I guess you two coming into this with a blended family.
It's also a question, I think, of like what you split, right? So I'm like, there's like the very pragmatic things of what it is to parent, you know, doing all the many forms that need to be filled out and things to, you know. And then there's like the emotional piece of like, who's going to be the one to be really present with that kid when they're having a hard time and like take themselves away from the other thing they wanted to do? Or I don't know. I just think there's a lot of ways, and it's been challenging, I think, for us because we have this like 3-to-1 ratio in this certain way. And back to that piece of like two pieces, one, Gwen having like a lot of like capabilities and natural inclinations to like wrangle a bunch of kids and be the really fun one who like does all the things, and me being more of a person who's like, so I need like lots of alone time. I've had a busy week. I'd like to go journal and drink some tea now, and then I'll be ready to pair. You know, I mean,
yeah.
And that's just true about us as people, right? So like, we're navigating that. We're navigating the fact that like, in a financial sense, like three very much belong to Gwen, one belongs to me, you know, and like that creates many different sort of complicated scenarios at different points.
Yeah, I never thought about the money aspect of blending your family.
It's interesting. I mean, that, you know, and I think like that stuff comes up, for example, when we're on vacation. Do you know what I mean? And we're like, cool. So we plotted out all these things. Like how are we splitting this up? Like how are we doing this? So yeah, there's a lot of ways I think like, you know, beyond the piece of like, I agree. I think like in a lot of hetero relationships, things become very quickly divided along gender lines. And like, there's not a lot of conversation around that. And it does look really different in queer families. And I would say like in a blended family, there's all these other layers of like,
it's a lot of layers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it feels like queer in this sense of like, again, just like how we're deciding to be together and also independent it feels like we're like, yes, we're blended. But again, like there's this piece where I'm like, we're not just like, cool, let's like lump everybody in and we'll all make all of our, suddenly we're going to start making all of our choices together.
It's not the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
But it sounds like Y'all are doing a terrific job, and it sounds also extremely complicated.
Both are true. It's like easy, and it's easier, I think. I think it's so funny to tell people you have four kids. They're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You
know? And I'm like, literally.
Actually, I'm not convinced. Like, it's, I think we have a significantly easier thing going on. You know, I mean, whatever. There's so many factors that go into what makes something easy or complicated. But, but I think a big part of that is like, and maybe it's a function of like knowing that there's, I mean, we have three kids with ADHD. Like, you have to set your house up for kids to thrive. And I think like what is true is that like that has served everybody, even though they all look really different in terms of the presentation or their identities. Yes. Like they all know like it's fine to like lose your shit and like someone's going to take care of you. And they also all know like, no, but really we have expectations and like we're going to support you in meeting those. Yeah. Right. And I feel like some of that actually mitigates a lot of what, I mean, like it can get loud and chaotic, but at any point, if you're like, hey, you all have a friend over, that's a lot of kids. Like, let's pipe down. Okay, Chachis. They're like, okay, fair.
Yeah. I know. They it's really interesting. And my daughter who has ADHD, I feel like she's very she's aware, she's very self-aware, because she kind of has to be because she's gone through a good amount of emotional things in her 9 years on this earth, and so she is self-aware, and she knows when she's loud, and she knows when she's gonna lose it. She doesn't know how to stop it, but she knows it's gonna happen. And you know, and then she's always very remorseful, and it's hard. It's hard, so tender. Right?
I feel like I know exactly, like what you just described happens here often, and it's like, yeah, it's so tender, and it's so beautiful. It's so amazing. It blows my mind, actually, like how much self-awareness. I think, you know, particularly, like we have one who really, like, it's almost like every, it's like clockwork, like every morning, like, and the same, like by the time, you know, breakfast has been had and like it's like 7:30, the amount of remorse and the like, I'm really sorry. And it's like so tender and so sweet. And I'm like, wow, that's skills that most adults don't even have.
Truth. 100%.
Good on 100%. You. You are winning right now. We have this game. I'll make a little plug for this product. We are not sponsored by them, but maybe we should be.
And
it's
from
the School of Life, and it's called The Family Game. And it asks a series of questions like, who in the family is like most likely to lose it and have like XYZ of a thing happen? And the kids love this game. Like they love it.
They're imitate, like, imitate what so-and-so would say if such and such happened. Yeah, totally.
It's a really,
oh my God, that's fun. Yeah, that's fun.
Fun resource.
I'm going to get that because that's fun for dinner time chats to get the kids to kind of open up. We have this card game we bring out that asks just fun questions, but that's a good one. I'm going to get that. But yeah, you know, the bottom line is, parenting is hard. And when you add, I love it. It's like, duh. Yeah, it's freaking hard. But like you add all these different layers in that A, LGBTQ families have from the get-go. Then you add the layer of divorce and blending of families. And then you have neurodiversities. And this is universal all over the world. Every single family can relate to the conversation we just had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what else? I saw this thing on the TikTok, as you do. I learn everything on TikTok. I saw this person, he's supposed to be some like expert in parenting children with ADHD. And he was like, don't keep repeating yourself to your kid. They're not going to hear it. You're just going to get yourself mad. You know, he's doing this whole thing. He said, what you do, you need physical contact. You know, you look in your kid's eyes, you put your hands on their shoulders, and you say, please go brush your teeth. And you make sure they look at you, right? So I was like, I'm going to try that. The next morning, at first I went, Rose, I need you to. And then I went, wait. Okay, wait. I have this new method. I have this new technique. I went over. I put my hands on her shoulders. I looked deep in her eyes. I said, Rose, I need you to brush your teeth. And she looked at me and she said, what is wrong with you? Why did you just put your hands on me? Like, what is that? Mom, what was that? Ew.
Totally. She was like, that's fucking creepy.
And then the rest of the morning, I kept doing it. She kept being like, Mom, what? And then it just became like a joke. And now I just do it as a joke. And we have a laugh together. You know what I mean? Anyway, look, parenting is hard. I think you two are doing a top-notch job, and I'm just so happy that I got to chat with you.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure. Yeah.
This has been really fun. And please tell everybody where we can find you. And Liz, tell everybody about your podcast and the stuff. Like, where can we find y'all?
I have a podcast called First Person Plural, Emotional Intelligence and Beyond. That's one place to find me. And then my business is New Realm Coaching and Consulting.
And Gwen, the name of your book one more time for us.
Immaculate Misconception.
And it comes out in June.
It comes out late May, it turns out.
Oh, late May.
Yeah. You can find my website is drgwenbass.com. And you can find me on social media too.
Thank you so much. This has really, really, really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love is love is love is love.
Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. What a good story. But... the conversation is not over, folks. Be sure you're following the show on all the socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at the Queer Family Podcast. You're going to get photos of all the guests there, some videos, and just, you know, all around fun from yours truly. Who doesn't want that? Don't miss out. You don't want FOMO. Nobody wants FOMO. And don't forget to join me on Patreon to help me create this super important queer content. You're going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to sign up and get that bonus content. And one more thing, if you love this show and want to represent your love for us and our beautiful families, you need to head to our shop and get some Queer Family Podcast merchandise. We've got so many designs, and you could put these designs on any product in the store. We've got t-shirts, mugs, hoodies, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to tpublic.com and search for the Queer Family Podcast. Or you can find the shop on our website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. There's so many ways, so many ways. All right, folks, that's it for this week. Tune back in next week for another episode all about family, but with gay.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.